Hello, everyone. My name is Kristen Bauer, and this is my podcast, Redefine Beauty, where I share and offer a new perspective on beauty through the lens of love as an internal vibration expressed externally and then witnessed by others. It starts with love and compassion for our bodies, for our lives, and the gift that we are to the world. And hopefully this helps my listeners to connect to the truth of beauty. I feel like I grew up in a reality where beauty was very dependent on what my face and hair and body looked like, and this set me up for failure. I now believe that beauty is an energy. It is our life force that shines from within. It comes through the love that we have for ourselves and these phenomenal bodies that we are gifted with. A blemish, a line, a bit of cellulite can never take away from our beauty. When we learn that these marks are messages from our body and respond to our bodies with healing and nurturing, remarkable consciousness begins to blossom. Our beauty doesn't age and it doesn't break down. It gets wiser and more magnificent as we learn and discern our own truths. And when we are clear and share our true amazing self, our beauty is a gift to the world and specifically those around us.
Thank you so much for being here today, Allie. I'm really excited. You are the first person that I have on the podcast who works in mental health. And I'm really excited because it's you and I love you so much and appreciate you. And I really want to hear about mental health and our beauty industry and our beauty and our body images. So I like to start off the podcast. I always ask everyone the same question because I just want to know from around the world, all different people, how you felt your introduction to beauty was. What are those first memories and those core beliefs around beauty that you remember that shaped, maybe not necessarily who you are now, but shaped your starting point in life around what you thought beauty meant for you and for the rest of the world?
Well, first, let me start off by saying thanks for having me. This is so exciting. And, you know, it didn't start off very good. I was born into a family that was highly focused on the way you look. It didn't matter how you felt. It didn't matter what was going on. As long as you look good, everything else was okay. And that was a really, really difficult standard as a kid to maintain because it was a lot of pressure. It was a lot of, you need to look a certain way, but you're a kid. Mm-hmm. And all you're interested in is having fun. And it was very confusing. It was very difficult. I remember early off, and I guess I'll be very honest in the fact that
please.
I was adopted into a family. And so I already came, and I was the youngest of the kids at the time. So I already came into siblings that were 16, 17 years old.
And how old were you?
I was adopted at birth.
Okay.
But I look different than everybody. They're all darker and, you know, and then here's me. And it just remember feeling really different because I was like, well, they're beautiful, but I'm not. They seem so put together, whatever that means as a little kid, mm-hmm. I'm not. My dad was a bodybuilder and was really focused on how you look. And that was hard. It was confusing. I remember comments being made about my face. And those were all really traumatic because it's like, well, what is beautiful?
Mm-hmm. And we're so taught that beauty is this thing that has to do with our nose and it has to do with our skin color and our butt size and our waist size and how long our eyelashes are. Right.
For me, I felt like beauty was over there and I was over here. Mm-hmm. And it didn't feel like there was anything beautiful about me because it was always, well, that person looks so pretty and that's not you. And so it was difficult thinking back. I mean, I don't, While I think about myself a lot, I don't know if I think so much back on growing up and, you know, those expectations placed on me of what beauty really was.
I remember being a kid and mine was all the magazines,
yeah,
which I've talked on here a lot. And I remember reading the magazines and, you know, at one point everybody had, you know, very arched eyebrows. And then another point everybody had kind of flat eyebrows. And then I remember tucking in my lips when I was a kid because I felt my lips were too puffy, you know? So, and it all came from what were these models in the magazines looking like? And that's what I decided beauty was. And that's what I decided I should look like, and spent, you know, a good part of the initial part of my career, obviously, because I worked in plastic surgery, really ingrained in that whole lifestyle of beauty revolving around this external experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That beauty was exactly the way you looked on the outside, and it didn't take into account like the other parts of who you are. And, you know, when you have a family that doesn't teach you about all of this, you kind of are left to your own devices to create what you think. And it wasn't good and it wasn't nice.
For the most part, I very rarely interview someone who responds back. It does happen. I have had a few people who respond back. They have this incredible idea around beauty. And it's interesting, most of those people grow up very much engrossed in nature. So they're outside, they're not really in big cities, they're kind of in this little bubble of their family that's very connected to Mother Earth and nature. And they have a sense of beauty very different than those of us who maybe grew up in a city where we had access to like these magazines and these TV shows. And, you know, people were really more, I'd say in cities, I would imagine people tend to be more concerned about the physical appearance.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was a lot of pressure put on in those environments, in the cities, in the industry and all of that, compared to a slower kind of pace of what beauty is, or even to me having that conversation of what do you find beautiful,
right?
Could have opened the door in such a different way, as opposed to being something that's shame filled.
Yes.
Because beauty to me, or at least what I thought of myself, was shame filled.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And what about now? You know, you've had this whole change in who you are, really a lot of personal development. Your career is now completely about that inner self. Yeah. How have things shifted for you?
Tremendously. I mean, we've known each other a long time, so you've kind of seen me on the journey. I think being in the middle of my 40s has redefined beauty, but also a tremendous amount of inner work. Beauty is internal. Mm-hmm. You can see the most beautiful woman walk by, and if she's not happy and that's not coming from the inside, it's a face. Beauty is embodiment of who we are.
I love that. That's so beautiful.
Thank you.
When do you think that started to shift, and what things created that change in view?
Well, I'm going to answer what change, what, okay.
What was the catalyst?
Of misery.
Okay.
Misery was the catalyst. I was miserable. I was getting a divorce. I had three little children. I didn't like myself. That was the catalyst, because I remember sitting there going, there's got to be more than this. Mm-hmm. There's got to be more than this. I was so incredibly hard on myself. And it's interesting, even now, I just kind of came out of the last few weeks of being really angry at myself about not losing enough weight for a trip that I'm going on. And it was like 2 weeks of really being cruel, like, you didn't do it. And it took even more effort to go, hey, you know, that's not going to get you where you want to be. Maybe a little kindness will. And so it's, I think it's the delicateness of seeing of recreating what beauty is to us. It's very, very subjective as opposed to objective when you're looking outside of yourself.
Got it.
Yeah.
And you feel like this kind of shifted in your 40s?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, my 30s, I was busy having babies. My body was like every different size, my, you know, I mean, all the hormones of that, everything. My 40s started to become about me.
Wow.
And I think that was the shift, that it became about me in how do I love myself more.
I love that.
Thank you.
And so I really appreciate that your line of work revolves around trauma. You work in mental health, you're especially focused on trauma. Yeah. And I'm wondering what you see in this career with your patients, the implications of the traditional beauty standards and norms that we both grew up with and that we felt the effects of. What translates into people's mental health, into some of the trauma work that you're doing? Tell me a little bit more about that.
So the trauma work that I do is essentially, I'm trained in complex trauma, which is long enduring patterns of traumatic activities going on. But even more so, the trauma that I deal with is what happened inside of us. Mm-hmm. What happened? Everyone has trauma at various degrees, but it's after that trauma, what went on? Were we supported? Were we loved? Were we nurtured? And usually when we weren't, we then begin to abuse, we begin to abuse ourselves as well. And as adults, abuse to ourselves is shame, guilt, and pressure. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how we act in. So how that relates to beauty specifically is the intense amount of shame, and I can speak about myself just because I'm human and I go through it too, is how much I shame myself when I'm not exactly where I feel and how I look or how I want to come off, or there's no room for movement. I get this like fixed idea, and when I'm not that, I shame myself. Mm-hmm. When I'm not that, I guilt myself. And so it shows up in my clients as well, and they can get really fixated on body parts, really fixated on their face or something specific. And what's really interesting about it is most of the time they don't even notice they're doing it.
Wow.
Unless it's on the extreme sense, you know what I mean? And that's every waking moment is thought about it. But I'll have clients sit in and go, God, I'm so ugly. And they don't even realize they've said it. And they're already on the next topic. And so it becomes so ingrained in their subconscious and just the way they think. They're not even aware.
Wow.
Yeah.
I did, you know, when I worked in plastic surgery and I was starting to see some things in that industry that really didn't feel in alignment with what I thought, you know, as I started to shift and kind of wake up a little bit more. And so I did one study where I asked people to go in the mirror every single morning and write down the first 10 things that they noticed about themselves. It didn't have to be their face. It could be body, hair, anything, whatever.
Right. I love that.
And they, everybody was negative. They noticed always the negative things first. And as I started to create my redefined beauty practice in the more recent years, a big thing that I focus on is getting really clear about this unconscious conversation. And our negative dialogue has way more implications than positive dialogue. So when people are just without even realizing it, I'm fat, I'm ugly, I can't believe I didn't get enough work done today, I'm not good enough, I didn't drink enough water, I didn't lose enough weight. Those things are kind of rattling around in the brain. I mean, I've read all sorts of reports. Sometimes we're thinking 20,000 thoughts a day. Other reports say 70,000.
70,000.
I don't know. I feel like that's a lot.
Women are more than men even.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
You know, so, and if most of our thoughts tend to be the same thoughts over and over again, very repetitive, then, you know, I can't imagine what we're creating in our reality if we're repeating thousands of times that you know, I'm not beautiful, or I'm not skinny enough, or, right. you know, it really all relates back to I'm not worthy.
Right.
And if you're seeing people, they just say it and don't even notice it.
Right. No, I mean, it's, they're already on to the next thing before
yeah.
they've even slowed down enough to go, hey, did that just come out of my mouth? Or where did that come from? No, it is so ingrained as if they were saying hello.
So tell me about body dysmorphia.
Okay, so I'm going to come at it from a trauma lens.
Please, and, I want to hear this.
I mean, but essentially body dysmorphia is, and this again is my kind of, the way I'm explaining it, is people get completely fixated on a body part and find it just disgusting. They're cruel about it. It will never, a great example, I have a client who comes in who doesn't like that her stomach has a little bit of a pouch.
Okay.
Well, you and I may go, okay, like that's just, you know, part of who we are or whatever. It becomes the drive, the waking moment. It's almost the purpose of how much I can hate this.
Wow.
So it's a little bit body dysmorphia. It mimics OCD and that repetitive oh. thinking, but it's something on you.
So they're so hyper-focused on, you know, yeah. for her, a little belly pouch.
Right, right.
And what, but what does that do for her?
It allows, in all honesty, it allows her to not feel what she needs to feel. And really, that's what it comes down to, even in trauma work, is if we've been highly traumatized, especially as a child, scar tissue grows around our heart. Mm. And we feel things, but we tend to feel the anger and the shame at a higher level, but we can't get to that joy and all the things that, you know, make the beauty of life, life. We get stuck with the scar tissue there. And so, in a sense, traumatic clients that get fixated on a body part, it allows them to separate from themselves. And in my line of work, we call those strategies.
Okay.
So I stay away from diagnosis, all of those things, but we all have strategies that we do to keep away from ourselves. Mm-hmm. So an example of mine is I act in on myself and believe everything's my fault.
Okay.
That's how I navigate the world. Oh, someone didn't call me back. Must be because I'm bad, or, you know, and this is more of an internal conversation than it is I'm calling friends to talk about it. It's just the way that I operate.
Yeah.
So it's kind of in the same thing. It's a strategy to keep yourself away from feeling, because at least you know the feelings of hating that part of your body.
It's familiar. It's
very familiar.
And in a way, probably very safe.
Yeah. Wow. Right. Because at least you know you're going to hate it.
Okay. It's there.
It's there. And
it's reliable.
It is. I mean, wow. Uncertainty is the trigger.
Wow.
You know, so.
So we have, you know, a very collective, I think, unworthiness, self-hatred, issues around, you know, around body image, yeah. right? So we have, you know, a collective people that feel this way, and we're kind of reflecting it all to each other all the time.
Yep.
And, you know, then you have to think about the children that are coming into the world and the way it's already part of the collective, but then the way most people are modeling and behaving, they're teaching these patterns and there's these behaviors, just how, you know, how we treat ourselves, how we treat others. And it's kind of this, you know, unknown and unspoken about thing in the world, which is what I really want to, you know, bring to the surface and create some change around, is how we identify with ourselves mm-hmm. and our beauty and how we can share that with the world. Do you see that there's a lot of implications? So, you know, for me, I feel like every person is just this really beautiful soul, right? They have this spirit, they have things that they're here to do.
Absolutely.
When they find their purpose and when they're clear, it really creates this light.
Yeah.
And do you see that, you know, even someone who's found that, because that can even take time, even someone that's found that purpose and found their passion in life, do you see that there's implications with body image really getting in the way and distracting someone from living in their divine purpose?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's just another way to act in on ourselves, to dislike ourselves, to hate ourselves, to feel frustration towards ourselves. That's not fixing it. And not that people need to be fixed, but it perpetuates it. I mean, we all get frustrated with our bodies at times and ourselves, but it's that consistent dislike when it be that becomes concerning.
And that dislike, where does that tend to start from?
Well, I'm a developmental and attachment trauma therapist, so everything to me starts in childhood.
And like in the womb, a couple of years old.
Very early
Okay,
on,
very
very
early.
early on. It can be in the womb. It can be all the way through being a teenager, even that we're so affected by that. It creates our personality, how we manage difficulty early on in life tends to be brought into our adulthood, hence our strategies. They start in childhood.
It
Yeah.
feels like an epidemic
It is an
when
epidemic.
we talk about it. I mean, from all the people that I've interviewed, most people have very sad, traumatic, or even if it's not quite sad or traumatic, just not positive views on beauty from childhood.
Yeah.
And those things are easily being passed on to kids if they're not being navigated and we're not modeling. So now we have a big percentage of the population that are living in this space that, they're redirecting this negative energy at
Right.
themselves. And then how are we able to share positive, beautiful energy with others if that's such a limiting experience?
Well, we're not. I mean, authentically,
Yeah.
I mean, we can try our best, but I think it really starts at home with us and changing those long-standing beliefs of what we believe or what we were taught beauty is. In a sense, it's standing in front of the mirror and looking at yourself with the love that you needed as a kid.
Yeah.
Giving that, I mean, because when we were kids, we needed it from other people. As adults, it's up to us to start to give it to ourselves.
And what do you think would be the long-term damage on an individual level if someone doesn't start to shift that and create that love for themselves? And then even on a societal level, what happens when people aren't taking into consideration and changing this belief around beauty?
Well, let's go to the first question of I often say what you don't heal, you will bleed all over everybody else and call it love. And the truth
And you don't
is,
even know it.
you don't even know it. You think you'll blame it on everything outside of you. The guy down the street wasn't nice to me or whatever it is, without taking into account, hey, I think the questions need to start to be asked, what do you believe beauty is? Not what were you taught beauty was. What do you believe it is now? Because I think they're markedly different, but there's not enough conversations around beauty. Because even the word can be intimidating. Because if you say beauty to someone and ask them what's beautiful, most likely they'll give you something outside of themselves. Oh, this actress, oh, this, that.
Yeah.
They'll never go, well, me, I am.
I love that.
Yeah, so the standard has been placed outside of us, and that's really hard to achieve. So I really think to shift this epidemic means coming home.
It's true. Even when I think about beauty, and I tend to relate beauty to nature, I tend to think what the flowers are incredibly beautiful. The stars at night when you're not in a light pollution area and you can see all the stars, the waterfalls. I tend to think Mother Earth is very beautiful, and that's my idea of beauty. But it's so interesting. I've never had anyone bring up what you just said about, and I talk about that all the time. That's part of my career is about this inner experience of beauty.
Right.
And yet that was a really profound thought for me right there, just to really think this is beautiful inside.
Oh yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Thank you. It's interesting.
Do you think there's a big implication in society if we don't start changing our standards of beauty and our ideas of beauty?
Oh yeah. I think it's an epidemic. I mean, we can look at sales of Botox, sales of all, I mean, the beauty supply industry is a multi-billion dollar industry. Everyone's looking for the next thing to make them feel beautiful.
Yeah.
But
and that's a distraction.
It's just a distraction. It is. It's just a distraction from asking yourself what it is that's beautiful to you inside of yourself.
Yeah.
And if you can't find that, start really small.
Yeah. I was reading a study just the other day. They inquired between 350,000 people how many of them were actually satisfied with their body or their look. And 40% of women were not. I believe it was 30% of men, which I would have guessed more.
Yeah.
That actually was surprising for me. But even still, if that's the honest truth in society, I think to have such a large percentage of people just not to feel happy with themselves and love and appreciate their body, this vessel, this vehicle, I think it's really, you know, sad. And also just should show us that we have to shift something, because to have people walking around with that aspect, everything that we do, we share all of our internal self, all of our fears, all of our anger, all the unworked on emotions that are really blockages for us, and this shame or unworthiness that we have with our bodies. We share that. Like you said, you bleed it all over everybody. We should, everything we do beautiful, everything we do kind has all of our essence with it. We cannot hide our frequency. Our vibration is the truth about who we are.
Right.
And we're walking around sharing that. And can you imagine if, you know, 90% of our society walked around feeling love for themselves and their bodies?
I mean, it would be a completely different world.
Yeah.
I mean, so. It really would.
Yeah. I mean, for me, that's a big part of why I started this podcast, just to really talk about it. I want to bring to the surface how much I think the beauty standards and the beauty industry is really ready to change.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're just at this point where we're really ready to embrace a new consciousness around beauty.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that you do in your career or your therapy with people to help shift this?
Well, I think the biggest part of healing is allowing someone to feel seen and heard and validated. Even when they bring up an issue with their body, you know, our initial response is to go, no, you're not. You look great. Like, don't stop. But it's deeper than that.
It's true.
It's so much deeper than that. So allowing, for me, at least, my clients to say, hey, I really hate this about myself. Okay, well, tell me why you hate this. We can usually link it back to something that happened in their childhood, to something that someone said. A lot of times I'll ask them, that voice in your head, while it may sound like you, that's insulting you, do you really think it's you? Mm-hmm. So often we internalize someone else's, a critical parent. Mm-hmm. We internalize their voice as our own.
Well, they say that, right? Your parents' voice becomes eventually your inner dialogue, right?
Correct. But it's masked with the sound of our own. Mm-hmm. And to even take that a step further is, nobody teaches us that. Kids aren't taught early on, you don't have to listen to that.
Yeah.
It doesn't know anything. It's only going based on what's already happened to you.
That's one of the things I really appreciate about my daughter's school. They're very focused on emotion and self-love and listening to that inner self and connecting right to that.
Oh, I mean, it gives her such a running start, mm-hmm, you know, to loving herself, because That's what it's about.
Yeah, I don't think geography matters that much if you don't love yourself.
No, I don't think anything matters much because you are then in survival mode. Mm-hmm. And when you're in survival mode, your armor is up, mm-hmm. your heart is closed, and you are just trying to survive the next moment. I often talk to my clients about bracing for impact.
Okay.
Consistently, when you're in survival mode, you're bracing for the next difficult thing. When you can shift from survival mode, your heart begins to open a little bit. You want to learn. You become curious. And perspectives shift. You can then, in that space, begin to really open up your heart for yourself.
Yeah, I think that that is just so important to understand, even for our health.
Yeah.
Because how healthy is it for us to be constantly in this state of stress and fear and being ready for something damaging to happen?
We're wired for short bursts of that. So even to take it all the way back to our DNA at cavemen, it was wired, survival mode was wired into us because there's a Tyrannosaurus Rex chasing you. You better run, you better armor up and you better run. The problem is that somewhere along the lines, sitting with a friend that may have been critical becomes the danger. And then we become the danger to ourselves.
Wow. So what are some things that people can do at home to create more self-love and to really take an honest look at maybe what's underlying that is showing up as self-disgust or unworthiness or not loving their body and their looks?
I would say at the most basic level, begin to get curious. Hey, why do I do that? Hey, where did that come from? Hey, do I even believe that? Or is it just something that I keep hearing?
Yeah.
Or something that was ingrained in me as a kid? Start to challenge it a little bit in that sense of, where did it come from? I mean, and I think more than anything, it's starting to find that compassion when inside of ourselves, that kindness. So I go back to this example of a few weeks ago, I was really angry at myself about not losing weight, this and that. And then it bled into, you look terrible, try to hide from the pictures. And I went, okay, why am I doing this? Number one, so I was able to slow myself down. And number two, I was able to go, hey, is that really serving you? Is sitting here and being angry with yourself and being mad really going to get you where you want to be? Or is it going to allow you to sit here and just be angry? And I was like, no, I'll just sit here and be angry. It took me a few days and I went, you know what? It's okay to be angry that you didn't do what you needed to, but it's not okay to attack yourself. So it's separating like the behavior from the feeling for me too, because they're very different.
And you think there was any other anger that was within that needed an outlet?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, it'll show up in so many different ways. So I had talked about earlier on about my strategy is to turn on myself. Well, turning on myself also means being cruel to myself. Mm-hmm. It doesn't just show up when someone doesn't call me, or it shows up when I'm frustrated of doing the same things that my clients do, that we all do. Mm-hmm. But the difference is awareness and love.
Yeah, I think that's so important when I teach meditation or, have people, I tell them breathe, but don't change your breath. Do not breathe deep. Do not breathe a specific way. I want you to notice your breath. Because if you have no idea how you're breathing throughout the whole day, how do you know if that breathing is the type of breath that really serves you?
Right? That's so interesting. And
we start our Redefine Beauty programs together the first chunk of time. And people always are like, this seems a little ridiculous. And I have them spend a really big amount of time, and it serves a huge purpose in the end. Looking at all of the things that they say about themselves, like I did in that initial study, I need to know everything mm-hmm. that you say about yourself all day long that's negative. We need to start to really get to the point where we understand that unconscious conversation.
Yeah.
Because it's not a matter of changing it a little bit or changing it a lot. It's about changing it, or, you know, in my experience of working with people, completely, because that negative self-dialogue is really very detrimental. And so it just rattles around in the brain and we keep projecting it into our reality. And if we're projecting that unworthiness, really, it's going to show up not just how we view ourselves, but it's going to show up in the whole world around us.
Right.
And so we're creating Absolutely. A reality that's filled with unworthiness because essentially of a beauty spectrum that is very unrealistic and has only to do with our physical body and doesn't have a lot to do with our internal being.
Yeah. I mean, it's so true. And when that standard is out there and it's a certain way, a certain ideal, and we fall short of that perceived ideal, it just allows us to attack ourselves. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there's two parts. Let's change the ideal, number one, and that's all the collective coming together. But let's also change how we relate to ourselves. Often I'll ask a client when they're really fixated, why does it feel safer to be so cruel to yourself and be kind to you?
Mm-hmm.
I ask people that all the time. What's safer about that? And they often look at me like, wait, what? Huh? And it's like, no, really, that's what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's asking ourselves the difficult questions.
Wow. I like that. And that's a good one, I think, for anybody to ponder that's listening, you know, whether it's your image of your body or your worthiness in any aspect of life, if it's this repetitive experience of not being good enough or not being something enough, why is it more comfortable? What do you get out of being not good enough?
Right.
So.
Right. Because somewhere it serves them. And so often people don't realize how small they've made themselves. And part of this work is realizing that the space you take up is your space.
Mm-hmm.
Please take it up with all the beauty and zest you have as a human.
That's so sweet.
Yeah.
If you would give one piece of advice that I think could really support our listeners, if someone's looking to redefine their beauty, what would you share?
I think just follow my lead with this is that I think beauty comes out in us when we feel alive. So then I would say to someone, well, what makes you feel alive? Some people, their hobbies, whatever it may be. Well, then do more of that. And get a screenshot of yourself after you've done that. Because you'll see it in their face. See it in their posture. Because they did something that was good for them.
Mm-hmm.
So what makes you feel alive? What turned you on in that sense? Doing more of that. The other thing I think is it goes back to that kindness of, hey, how did you want to be treated about around beauty? So we can all think back to what our ideal was, you know, what our experience was, what beauty was imposed as kids. How did we want to be treated in that? What did you want to see your parents or whoever it was that taught you about beauty? What did you want to see them teach you?
Mm-hmm.
Start doing that.
Okay.
Because it's a lot easier to think about what we'd do for somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
What would you do if you had a daughter who didn't like themselves, didn't like that beauty, that physical beauty aspect of themselves? What would you say to them? What would you do? Now do that to yourself.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
We have a lot of the answers inside of us.
We have all the answers.
I feel like it's more about asking the questions.
Yeah.
I think that's great.
Yeah, it really is about asking the difficult questions, but we shy away from them because we think the answers are going to be pain-filled. But pain is our catalyst to learn. So it's redefining even what that is.
Redefining beauty, redefining
pain. Right. Because they are part of us.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have a daughter and it's, you know, I do a lot of this because I want to be a good example for her and a good role model for her. And I feel like that I'm very lucky to have grown up in a world before social media and cell phones.
Me too.
I see some of the things and I feel like there are really sad experiences for kids out there, more common now because they're seeing this waist cincher, this exercise, this diet pill, this, you know,
Ozempic, all of it.
Yes, all these different things that are out there for people to, and we do, I do agree that most people think skinnier is beautiful, no lines is beautiful, things like that. Right. And so really changing the experience of beauty is such an internal process.
Right.
And really constantly, I'm constantly redirecting Essie and redirecting myself. Because everything that I'm seeing in her is really, I'm the role model for that. In social media, maybe helps or doesn't help depending on what she's looking at. But I, you know, I really want to keep redirecting myself. And you have three boys.
Right. I mean, and it's interesting. I think boys get left on the side with beauty.
Yeah.
Because it's such a female-driven ideal. And so it's going back to my kids and what do you find beautiful? What looks good to you? What do you know, forget about what everyone else says. What do you say? Kind of allowing them to find their voice and figure out what's important to them, you know, and I think more than anything, modeling to our kids, not telling them.
Yeah.
I can talk forever with them and they don't hear anything, but the way I show up, the way my own vulnerability with them changes the game.
Yes. Yeah. We have some good kids growing up in the world that can really be an example of an internal space of beauty and share that, express that, see it in the world, see it in themselves, share it with others.
Yeah.
I try to, one big visualization I always teach Essie is when you walk down the street, I just want glitter and rainbows to be blasting behind you. You know, I want your essence to leave a trail of beauty.
Yeah.
And
so true.
How can people find you if someone wants to work with you?
Sure. So I have a website that is amcounseling.com. I'm kind of all over the place. I have a Instagram account that's amcounseling-1 on Instagram. And yeah, I mean, those are the best ways to find me out there. And I look forward to it.
I really appreciate you taking the time today to come and talk a little bit about beauty as far as your career, your lens. And I'm glad that we get to raise this conversation and talk more about it. And I appreciate that you're helping people and even
Thank
just
you.
Being you is helping.
Thank you. And you too. You're making such a difference out there and redefining what it is what it's about, making it what's beautiful to me, you know, and having a voice in this. So thank you so much. I'm so honored to be here.
Yay. And thank you so much, everybody, for listening. It's
been
such a nice show today. And I hope everyone has an organically beautiful day. Thank you so much for joining me today. Please subscribe, leave a review, share some comments, whatever tickles your fancy. And you can find a link in the show notes for 20% off your first order on Nourish. And I hope you have an organically beautiful day.